Do you treat life as a contest, chasing top marks in everything, right down to that perfect reverse park when you're out for a drive? We'll meet Dr. Justine Toe. She's been reflecting on how this quest has shaped her life, but undermined her spiritually. Justine's new book is called Achievement Addiction, and I wanted to know just who are these achievement addicts?
Haha, you are speaking with one. An achievement addict is someone who thrives on achievement and it matters just a little bit too much to them. I would describe it in spiritual terms in some ways. It becomes the reason for your existence. It becomes the thing that can guarantee the success or the otherwise of your life. An achievement addict is someone who finds that their reason for living, pathetically enough, can come down to how good they are at a particular accomplishment, or if they can point to their resume and say, yes, these are the things that I've done and I'm justly proud of myself.
You've got a lot to be proud of, Justine. You've got a PhD. You've been a presenter here on the ABC. The thing, though, that did actually intrigue and amuse me was the way that you said you found achievement in the tiniest things, like being able to parallel park your car. I thought, okay, that is an obsession. Not happy with a PhD, you've got to parallel park that car properly.
Oh my goodness, how much time have we got to unfold this? The thing with the PhD is that I have found that in trying to pursue a doctorate, I'm kind of looking to certify something about myself, to prove something to myself as much as to other people. And I wrote 100,000 words in order to gain the credentials so I could write PhD at the end of my name. But it's really strange because even after writing those 100,000 words, the addition of three little letters to the end of my name does not necessarily make me feel like I have achieved anything significant. So this is why I think it's also an addiction, because it doesn't deliver on what it actually promises. I might have looked to my studies to prove that I'm clever, but it's very strange to wind up with that accolade and still feel incredibly insufficient or inadequate. It's very brutal in that sense.
The thing is, Justine, listening to you explain this so eloquently, I'm trying to work out what's wrong with it, why you have such a problem with this. Because good things, striving, effort, they all sound good things, don't they?
They are good things. And this is the thing. Like, I'm not trying to say that achievement doesn't matter. Of course it does. We have the economists who tell us that our future as a nation depends on our increasing productivity. So I'm not trying to slam achievement, but I'm just calling out our conflicted relationship with it. I know so many women like myself. It's like we've never left that classroom in a way. We always want to do our best. We try really hard and we can be quite down on ourselves when we don't get what we're going for. And so I think it's worth us just taking a step back from all of this and say, look, this has been wonderful to have, and to be able to get what you've been going for is great. But to be able to also be conscious of the, I would say, spiritual harms that are involved as well, I think it's wise to be aware of them and try and make space for that critique as well.
We are going to talk about some of those spiritual harms that you talk about. But look, there is a dark side to this achievement addiction, and you nail it here, and that is related to this idea of meritocracy. The British philosopher Michael Young came up with the idea of meritocracy, I think, in the 50s, and a lot of people, including me for several years, really misunderstood this. Why is the idea of meritocracy, the idea that society should be run by the smartest people, actually quite dystopian?
It's funny because a meritocracy on face value actually seems really attractive. I think that many of us would say that an aristocracy, where someone is born to privilege, born to wealth, or might be the son of a king, that that person has done nothing to earn their position in life and earn their future success in life. Whereas a meritocracy, it's based on merit. It's based on people kind of working hard and earning their way in the world. Therefore, their success is entirely justified. But I think what Michael Young was finding about the meritocracy was that it was quite dystopian, because rather than having like a two-tier class system, I suppose, based on whether you're born to privilege or not, it actually then becomes supplanted by one caste of people who are the super high achievers, but then also an underclass of people who haven't tried as hard perhaps, or that they tried and then they failed. He was saying that it actually means that inequality becomes justified because your underclass of aggrieved underachievers didn't do enough to make a success of themselves in life. People like Michael Sandel have pointed out that things like Brexit, things like the election of Donald Trump to the US presidency have seemed to be roiled by a real split between those with university credentials, for example, and those without those. And so there's a real kind of like class warfare in some ways opening up between the deserving haves, the kind of meritocratic overachievers, and the undeserving have-nots. I mean, I don't think they're undeserving, but this is the kind of dynamic that gets set up.
Well, I think you actually say that it leads to a politics of humiliation.
Yeah, that's right. Because if you look around and you don't see yourself or people like yourself that are valued and esteemed in everyday life, then it's hard not to feel as though you're being looked down upon. So I single out The West Wing for criticism. Obviously, that show's been finished for a long time. But I think it does occupy a particularly hallowed place in the liberal imagination as this is what politics should be like. This is what it means to be a well-educated, well-refined, well-rounded person in the world. And so you have to imagine, is someone who's never gone to university, if someone who works with their hands for a living, are they going to be able to look into that program and see something of themselves reflected back? Not quite. You just can't escape the idea that someone thinks that you're not good enough to rub shoulders with them. And I think that is a real problem because it destroys common bonds with each other. There's no way that you can recognize that we're all part of the same human tribe if these are the distinctions that we call upon in order to distinguish ourselves from each other.
You're a research fellow at the Center for Public Christianity. This is not necessarily a Christian or religious book per se, but you do argue, Justine, that whether you're a believer or not, there's something in a particular Christian parable that is a corrective to this achievement addiction, to this dystopian idea of meritocracy. What is that parable?
Yeah, well, it's a story that Jesus told. It's commonly known as the parable of the workers in the field. And he tells this story about how the kingdom of heaven is kind of like this guy who goes out to hire laborers for the day, and he promises them a fair wage. But he continues throughout the day hiring new people such that you've got people who've been there since, let's say, 6 a.m. and you've got people who've only joined the day of work at 5 o'clock and knockoff time is 6 o'clock, let's say. But then at the end of the day, when everyone's lining up to get paid, everyone, no matter what time they started, gets the same pay. And so Jesus tells this story to be like, in the kingdom of God, how much you earn or how worthy you are of success doesn't seem to matter to God. What actually really matters is the generosity of the owner, right, of God in terms of the kingdom of heaven. And he will be generous to all regardless of merit. And this story has always provoked me because I want to be recognized for my success. And that success often is based on how others went when confronted with the same assessment. And so it's shocking for me to look at this and to go, oh, okay. So are you telling me that I have been a striver in all sorts of ways for most of my life, but are you telling me that in God's economy, this actually counts for nothing? That really helped me understand the substance of grace, I suppose, which is such a key Christian idea, that it's not dependent on what you deserve, but that grace is a loving movement towards the other person for their own good and regardless of whether or not they are worthy.
You've quoted the psychoanalyst Carl Jung, who basically says that addiction is another form of religion. You also refer to this thing called workism. Has that become an alternative form of religion for many people? Workism?
Yeah, I think it kind of has. Like, I'm not that familiar with it. Oh, I'm so sorry, Andrew. Caleb, Mummy's doing an interview. Could you go right now? I really need to get this done. Can you go that way? No, please don't sit down, honey. Sweetheart? No. Can you please go? Thanks, honey. Okay, see, this is terrible, isn't it? I'm teaching him that he can
No, it's a
success.
Perfect.
Good behaviour means that you can have TV.
It's a perfect illustration of your point. Workism as a new religion.
Oh, that's right. Look, I think that the substance of what Carl Jung is talking about is that if you don't revolve your life around God, it's going to have to revolve around something else, right? And so for one person, like a former patient of his, alcohol was the solution to his spiritual thirst, let's say. And I think that for many of us, someone like me, I'm not addicted to substances, unless you count sugar. But beyond that, I'm addicted to achievement. And achievement has become that thing that has the kind of meaning and the significance of my life all wrapped up in it. And so, yeah, I think workists exist all the time. I live and work among workists. These are the kinds of people who often will never find themselves darkening the door of a church, but who express the same worshipfulness, let's say, and the same piety and the same sacrificial devotion to their work above plenty of other things that they could be devoting their lives to.
Dr. Justine Toe, she's a senior fellow at the Centre for Public Christianity. Her new book is called Achievement Addiction. Justine, thank you so much for being with us on the Religion and Ethics Report.
Thanks, Andrew.